Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen talks politics rap, tapping into the pulse of young folks. The politics rap teen consists of teens with diverse political affiliations, all in the IB program at Rickards High School. The panel seeks to analyze and evaluate current national, state, and local politics. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here at the table, I am welcoming.
Hi, I'm Millie Krivet. I'm in 11th grade, and I play guitar.
Hey, I'm Aniketh Mukirala. I'm a junior, and I play soccer.
I'm Apoorva Srivastav. I'm a senior at Rickards, and my first language was Hindi.
I'm Emma Hanley. I'm a senior at Rickards, and I like Latin.
Hi, I'm Sasha V. I'm a senior at Rickards, and I'm active in Science Olympiad.
Hello, my name is Raymond Johnson. I am a senior at Rickards, and I like to read about history and play trombone.
Well, welcome to 411 Teen. Some of you are old folks, and some of you are new, but I'm glad to have you all. Looking at local issues and events, is there anything that you would identify that you feel like we need to address before I lay out what I have? Nothing? Okay, no problem. I just wanted to make sure. STDs in Leon County are jumping. Syphilis saw an increase of 134% from 2017 to 2018, as reported last year on the Perspectives program here at WFSU. Two babies were born with congenital syphilis. My question is for you young folks, what does sex education in the public schools consist of? Does it exist? Where do people get their information? And I'll just start here and move around, wherever.
I don't know enough about it. I didn't go to public school in middle school.
Well, did you get any type of sex education?
Yes.
Okay, and what did you get? And where did you get it?
We learned about STDs in eighth grade.
Okay. And where?
I was at Cornerstone Learning Community.
Okay.
Yeah, for me personally, I guess it's been pretty lackluster. We haven't had any, like, sex education, like, during the entire course of high school. And I know we had, like, one teacher in ninth grade, but she was about, like, all we had. And I think that's really playing a part in this, like, the rise we're seeing in STDs, because people, like, you know, they tend to forget, like, how scary STDs can be.
Appreciate that info. Yes.
For me, sex ed kind of stopped in eighth grade. I wasn't really told much about sexual education in high school because that's not really a program that exists in high school, at least not at my high school. But I think there's two major problems that I would say are probably contributing to the rise in STDs in Tallahassee is, in high school or even in middle school, you're taught that there's safe ways to have sex, but it's not really reiterated. The only version of safe sex is abstinence. And when someone decides that they don't want to be abstinent, they don't really know much about STDs or the effect that STDs can have on them. So they're not really, I guess, they're not really scared of the consequences that much. And then also, same sex, like sex with the same gender, is like never touched upon. And that's something that you automatically have an incredibly high chance of getting an STD when you have sex with the same gender. And that's never touched upon in any sexual education course or any sexual education course that I've been a part of. So
really people who are part of the LGBT community don't know the effects that having sex with their partner could have.
Okay, you raised some good issues. We might need to come back to those. Yes, ma'am.
Kind of like what Aniketh said, we have had one teacher, our biology teacher, my biology teacher, does talk about sex ed and STDs throughout the year occasionally. She has a poster in her room that's like, should I have sex? And then there's the safest option, which is abstinence, and then safer options, which are like protected sex, only having sex with the same person, and then there's the least safe option, which is like unprotected sex with different people in short periods of time. And I think that maybe that kind of education is a little bit better. Like Apoorva said, in middle school we were kind of told, if you don't want STDs, just don't have sex. But that's not really...
Well, it's not realistic.
Yes.
You all are all laughing. Come on.
You know?
I think that, yeah, that's not, like, really a realistic thing to tell teenagers.
So what I hear from... Excuse me for interrupting. Well, what I hear from you all, and I haven't gotten to you, but I will, is that what the education you get really... is not meaningful.
Yeah.
Mm. It's really basic.
Well,
yeah. Yes.
There isn't much of a system, sex education. It's more like, the reason why we've all had one kind of session of this is in ninth grade specifically is because most of us took biology in ninth grade. And in middle school, in my middle school, sex education was only taught in science classes. And in high school, a lot of students don't like science. They drop out of those classes or they, you know, prefer history or psychology or something like that. So they don't get sex education. They get it 1 year, you know, because you have to take, in IB it's a little bit different, but you take like one science class. You just need the credit. So once the credit, you get the credit, you don't need to take science classes anymore. And then it's dependent on the teacher because they're, you know, it isn't a system. And because Leon County public schools are mostly run the same way, I would assume that other Leon County schools, public schools, don't have a system either. So once again, it's also dependent on the teacher. And then it's also filtered through. Only the students who are choosing to take biology or, like, science classes are getting it, so.
And then in biology, how accurate, how realistic is it?
From what I remember, it was
the
basically
egg and the sperm, and they join, and this, is it that?
No.
Okay.
Because it depends on the teacher. You know, I can't speak for all schools, but our teacher was pretty good, I think. It was pretty realistic. Okay. She's very down to earth, so it's like, you know, nothing is sugar-coated.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just the same thing as middle school, I would say.
Because all right. Okay.
It is a basic, this is what happens.
Okay. And Raymond?
Well, I have some early memories of something regarding like sex education in actually my elementary school. Fifth grade, they had all the males and the females separate and watch this video about going to a sleepover. And it was like lightly hinted at, and we had to get permission slips and everything to watch it and everything like that. And then when I went to middle school, they had the same sort of system where males, females got separated. You had the option to opt out if you wanted to. And I went to middle school with most of the people here, and it was the same basic sort of information. And ninth grade, I had the same biology teacher. I remember one of the experiments she did. She had us each get cups of water, and somebody had Sprite. And what we did is we had to pour with other people, and then we had to drink it. And whoever had the Sprite was the person who had the STDs. So it was showing like the ease and the spread of the diseases and everything. So,
Okay. So where do you get accurate information about sex? I mean, how do you find out about it?
Well, evidently not through our schools, but...
Okay.
I guess...
I mean, do you all talk among yourselves? Do you go on the internet? I'm just wondering where you gather the information.
Yeah, definitely talked amongst our peers. I mean, we're all teenagers, so most of us have thought about that, and we've discussed it with each other. And like, you still learn a lot just from even like pop culture or things that you see from the news, but it's not in-depth knowledge that could keep you from getting an STD in the future. It's just like, oh, this exists. Cool. Like, it's just like kind of on the surface, skimming the top, and it doesn't really delve into every single factor that could cause a future sexually transmitted disease.
I think some of us have parents or guardian figures that we can talk to, but a lot of people don't. Have that kind of relationship with their parents, but a lot of us have older friends who've already experienced things that we haven't experienced, and so we can talk to them, and they have more information than we do about things like that.
Okay. Any other comments and thoughts?
I think it's, at this point, it's mostly internet, and I mean, like, you're scrolling through Instagram, and a lot of accounts are just, like, really informational, and that's how a lot of us are learning about the real world, and it's just, you know, free-for-all in that way.
I think a lot of what's on the media is way more glamorous than it actually is, and I think more education about the safety aspects should be taught in schools.
Okay, and you touched on it. That's what I wanted to know. Whose responsibility do you think it is to educate you about sex? And what would you change, those two things, in the school system and how it's handled? You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm talking with a dynamic group of students from Rickards High School, the IB program. We were talking about sex education, and I posed a couple questions to you all. Whose responsibility do you feel it is to supply you with, inform you, educate you with accurate, realistic sex education?
I believe that it should be the government / schools, because at the end of the day, it's like a public health, like, ordeal, like, deal, right?
Excellent.
So, it's the government's job to keep us as healthy as possible, and so, yeah, okay. So that's my reasoning.
Any other comments? Thoughts about it? You don't feel it? What do you think, Raymond?
I kind of like the idea of having, like, maybe your parents to possibly kind of aid in that process, because... Uh-huh. They've gone through the experience. Clearly, if you,
I always get the feeling that it's difficult for the parents to do. So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be your parents. You have that relationship. Blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes parents don't feel comfortable in doing
talking
that.
About. Yeah. That, yeah.
So
you can't always rely on them to give you accurate or even like any information, really.
Yeah. That's true, too. I mean, yeah. Okay. Wow. I'm going to move on because I know we got stuff we want to talk about. But we need to talk about the 6-year-old in Orlando who was arrested and handcuffed by the officer. at a school in Orlando. Initially, the officer was suspended. What I understand now is that the officer has been fired. But what's your reaction to the six-year-old? The report stated that her grandmother said that she hadn't slept well that night. She had some type of condition, and I don't know exactly what it was, so that she may act out a little bit more when she doesn't get enough sleep. What was she doing? From what the report I read, the teacher had requested something, and she kicked something. I don't know if she kicked the person. You know, I don't know to what degree she was out of control. But she was six, and she was arrested and handcuffed. And what's your response? How do you feel? What do you think of this?
I mean,
that shouldn't be happening.
It's ridiculous. I hope everybody in this room feels that way, but...
Yeah. Arresting a six-year-old.
I mean, I know it. I just had to see what, you know, if you were having the kind of response that I had. A six-year-old female. Comments. I want to hear it.
I would like to know what was going through the police officer's mind.
I don't know. It seems like a big grown man would be easily able to subdue a six-year-old female.
Yeah, I mean, she's six. It's just a tantrum. And it's, you know, like, she's getting arrested. Is this, like, going on her record? Like, is he just using handcuffs as, like, okay, you know, did he think it's not anything serious? Like, oh, I'm just going to use this to calm her down a second, but, like, you know, it's unacceptable, really.
It's over the top.
She's six. That must have scared her.
Of course.
Can you imagine what impact that's, to me, it's like, what impact does this have? How is she going to view authority figures?
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like, again, I don't know. All I know is what I read. But it doesn't sound like she was totally out of control. And even if she was totally out of control, do you arrest and handcuff a six-year-old? I mean, what's the mentality?
There's not a lot that six-year-old... Actually, there's nothing that six-year-old could do to warrant being arrested in a classroom. I mean, there's a very low amount of things, and I don't think throwing a temper tantrum would do that. But also, the way this police officer reacted, it also creates, like, a kind of a bad environment for other students, because now these students are going to be growing up thinking that police officers aren't here to be helping us. They're here to just catch us in the act of doing something bad. And then now, especially, they're going to be growing up in the United States, where police officers are generally looked down upon and generally looked as people who don't care for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is just something to reinforce that mentality. And now these kids are going to grow up like that, and they're probably not going to want to treat police officers with respect.
And the impact of all these other little 5 and 6-year-olds
mm-hmm.
seeing this policeman grabbing their classmate, I mean, it had to be a very traumatic situation, not just for the victim herself, but for her classmates.
Yeah.
Okay. Other comments? Everybody's kind of sitting here like, she made this up. No, I didn't.
No, of course not.
I did not make it up.
I remember when I was little, I was deathly afraid of police because I thought it automatically meant that you're going to get caught doing something wrong and, you know, the repercussions are going to be, like, tremendous because it's police. It's like the government. So that, you know, I feel like a lot of kids might feel that way still, especially with what's going on at the moment. And this is just not helping at all. So,
I mean, you said that her grandmother said she hadn't gotten a lot of sleep that night. Mm-hmm. Like, a sixth grader is not, or no, a six-year-old is not going to just do something
like bad just out of their own nature. Like there's other factors going on, and so for a police officer to come in and not show any kind of like kindness or compassion or trying for understanding and just immediately like handcuff a 6-year-old, like do handcuffs even fit on 6-year-olds?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It also goes to show, like, why was the police officer called into the room in the first place?
Well,
like,
probably, you know, if she even started a tantrum or kicked, you know, the teacher probably called for the resource officer to come. You know, teachers are overwhelmed, too. And if she's got a room full of 5- and 6-year-olds, and one of them is even having a tantrum, she can't address, she or he cannot attend to that one student when you still have 25 others. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm just, I guess, I don't really know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's what I would think happened. I mean, for him to be there, he was summoned.
Yeah.
Okay, so she had to summon him. Okay. Okay, all right. Well, moving right along, a couple other questions I have, scenarios I'd like to share. Recently, I did an interview with a gentleman out of Arizona named Greg Merced, and he is an advocate for financial literacy education in schools. He's set up this program online to help parents financially educate students. And I wondered if you all get any type of financial literacy. There's about 16 schools in the nation, or 16 states, that require financial literacy education. Florida is not one of them, okay? But, you know, things like just investing and money management and credit cards, because that kind of stuff is targeted. You all are the targets of this, and working and et cetera. Do you, what kind of financial literacy education have you been exposed to?
In my experience, similarly to the sex ed stuff, it depends on the teacher, because I never took a financial literacy class or any kind of program for that, but I have a math teacher who has been really good. I've had her for 3 years or 4 years, and she's been really good at talking about that a lot. I remember in 9th grade, we did a project where we had to, like, find a city, find a house, find a job, like, all real places, and then like, look at our salary, look at cost of living, and plan out a whole budget, and make sure we were saving for retirement, and make sure we had money for all of these things. And I thought that that was a really good project to have us do, because I learned a lot from that, and I wouldn't really know otherwise. And she also talks about, like, recently she talked to us about credit cards, and, like, why you should have a credit card versus a debit card, or what the differences and all of that. So that was really good. But if people haven't had that teacher at my school, I'm not really sure what kind of things they're learning.
Okay, well, let's hear from the rest of the crew.
Well, I had the same teacher in 9th grade, so I went and did the same project. I remember not doing so well on the project, so I don't know how good I am still at financial literacy. But I did take economics courses as electives, and they're only offered as electives, so a lot of students also don't get that course. And in those courses, they don't really teach you about how to pay your taxes or student loans or anything that might impact you in the future. It's just like supply, demand, trading with foreign countries and all that. So it doesn't really dive deep into your future, but just teaches you economics in general.
Well, several of you all are seniors. Yeah. So you're going to be doing your own thing, so to speak, whatever it may be. And do you know how to handle credit cards or debit cards are, I mean, do you know? For example, I talked with one student, and of course she's graduated now, but she told me when she went away to college, about five different promoters of MasterCharge and Visa approached her. And so she got all five cards. And she just used those cards up, and then when one was filled up, she used up another one. She had no idea that she, really, that she had to pay these back. I don't know what she... This is what she said to me now. She said, I really didn't realize I had to pay them back, or about, she didn't know about the interest that would be accrued when she did this. And so when she graduated, I don't know, she had like $30,000.
Oh, my God.
Yes, really. She had about $30,000 in credit card. So that's why I asked you all this. I'm looking at you.
I mean, credit cards can, it's like sort of like big risk, big reward sort of thing. Like, having a lot of credit cards could actually like be a huge advantage. But at the same time, like, as you said, like, it could be a massive disadvantage. And, so to sort of like reiterate what everybody's been saying, schools really have no emphasis on financial literacy, like, whatsoever. That project in ninth grade was the only instance I've ever been exposed to, like, during like my schooling. And, only reason I know about it is because I watch a lot of YouTube and I'm into the whole investing thing, and my business club actually teaches financial literacy. Oh, okay. But other than that, it's like...
Well, the author that I interviewed, this was just Tuesday, was talking about how things have changed so, and it's even easier for you all to fall into that rut because we use invisible money now. Everybody uses a card. So you don't really realize, oh, I don't have this money. I can use this card, and the money may not be there, but you can still use the card and get what you want, and then you have to pay it at the end of the month or whatever. So that is a big factor, and that people don't understand that this card carries a lot of responsibility. So I just wondered how you plan to handle that. Those of you who may be going off on your own, doing your own thing, whatever it may be. Do you have budgets? How do you handle? How many of you have a job? Does anybody in here work?
I babysit, but I was going to say, I think it depends a lot on how your parents have raised you and how they've shaped your experience with money, because I know that I have a debit card and I have an allowance, but it's not very much, but I babysit, and so if I make money, then I have money to spend. But I have friends who, if they want to go out if they want to buy something, they'll, like, ask their parents, and then their parents will give them $100, and then they spend it. And then they don't really have a sense of the value of money or the value of, like...
How you get it?
Mm-hmm. Wish I had parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, let them adopt me.
That's not helpful in the future.
It really isn't. No, it's not helpful at all. And I'm so glad you shared that, because that was one of the points that he made, that, you know, these parents that just hand stuff out, you don't have an appreciation for what this really represents. And so you still get caught up in the rut of having a lot of debt or overextending yourself financially, you know, whatever may be the case. Any other comments? All right. My first question to you about this political stuff, you know. There are, I don't know how many candidates there are as far as the Democrats are concerned. I've lost track. I know several have dropped out, okay? Mm-hmm. But as a student, from your position, what are the major issues that the presidential candidates need to address? And why do you feel like these are major issues? You know, because they're all over, you know. But when it really comes down to it, from your perspective, what do they need to be addressing? What are your concerns as far as the politics are concerned? And I'm just... I'll start with you, Raymond, and go around the other way.
Well, I believe the two major issues that are most important right now are healthcare and immigration, especially the immigration aspect with how this president has been treating the immigration situation, and then healthcare, because...
Don't you think he's been doing the right thing?
I do not. No, not at all.
He's been handling so well. There's not a racist bone in his body.
It's just showing how much he is disgracing, like, that image of what America is supposed to stand for. We're supposed to be this nation full of immigrants and who are able to come together and work together. And it's just, I think that we need a person who is able to have America stand as that welcoming nation back again.
You want to get back? Back to what? What do you want to go back to?
Greatness.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Welcoming immigrants does come at pretty big expense.
That's true. Itself.
So you got to consider, there's got to be a balance to everything, right? Yeah. Like, I think we have, a million legal immigrants coming in every year. And most of those are, a quarter of them are, high-skilled, people with, doctors and stuff, going to universities. Mm-hmm. But most of them are actually family, people who already have family in the States. So do we, do we really need all that many, those many people who, crowd the labor market and cause, competition for, actual American citizens who are,
Trump uses a lot of them in all his...
I agree that Trump's a little bit extreme, but there's a reason so many people, to sort of emphasize this, ideology.
We're going to take a break, but we'll continue this conversation.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and today I have the Politics Rap Team, and we are looking at what's happening in the nation. The question I had posed is, what do you see as the major issues that presidential candidates need to address, and why? Were you finished? Did you have things to
work out? I was finished.
Okay. Who else? I'd like to hear from everyone, because I want to see where you're coming from. What do you think needs to be talked about? And because presidential candidates are talking about lots of things.
For me, the top issues that, when I'm watching the debates, that I want really talked about, and I mean, they're all talked about a lot, is healthcare, immigration, and climate change. Climate change isn't really that talked about, but I feel like it should be.
Mm-hmm.
For healthcare, watching the Democratic debates, I do see a lot of talk about that, whether we need a new framework, whether we need to get rid of private healthcare, whether we need healthcare for all. And then we also see a lot of talk about immigration, especially with what this current president is doing. And as an immigrant, that does make me happy, because this country gave me a lot of opportunities by letting me come here when I was 4, by letting my parents come here and work here. And it kind of really hurts when the president of the United States says, we don't want immigrants at this level because they're not good for our country, because he's talking to me.
Well, now, if you came from Scandinavia, you would be okay. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not being facetious. You all know said
that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So,
you looked the wrong way, brother. Let's call it like it is, okay?
It's when that type of rhetoric is used, it's not just, he's not just talking to the immigrants that are coming in, but also the immigrants who are already here, who feel unsafe, because he's attacking immigrants, and immigrants are everybody who are here, who weren't born here.
Mm-hmm.
And now these people are feeling unsafe, as if their jobs, their lives are at risk. And that's not a good environment to be living in. And then, obviously, climate change is something that's
going to be really prevalent in our future because...
Well, we have progressed here in Florida because you now can't say climate change. Yes. You know, under some governors, you couldn't even say climate change.
But we have we have teenagers now having to step up. Greta Thunberg, who went to the United Nations Summit for climate change and talked about climate change there, and is still being ridiculed by world leaders as being someone who doesn't really have an opinion because she's the age of 16. And really, it should be our opinions who matter the most because that's
why
offensive.
You all are here. That's why
these people
this program
are
going to
be
about.
6 feet below in a couple of years. So, and we're going to be people. We're going to be the people running the show. And we can't really run a show if the planet isn't here. Like, if the planet can't support us.
And if we keep going like we are, it's not going to be around.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is not going to be able to sustain populations. Okay. But I won't get on my soapbox, but... Okay, other comments?
Yeah, so for me personally, it's going to be economy and foreign policy. So I guess foreign policy-wise, like, I think in, like, the past 4 years, we kind of become, like, a laughingstock, like, in the international community.
And then, do you really think so?
Okay, maybe not the country, but, like, the administration's, like, approach to international policy and whatnot. But, you know, it's amazing just, like, how in such a short period of time we've gone from, like, I'd say highly respected of some kind to
get down there. Stuff.
But, yeah, so I want our country to be strong, and I want us to regain that, you know, that physical presence in the world where, like, our word matters and has sway. And then economy-wise, I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff stagnating, and, like, you know, wages are falling, and, you know, there's a lot of competition increasing, so, I mean, we really need a solution to that. I mean, a lot of candidates have a lot of unique ideas. I like Andrew Yang personally, but that's just me. His concept of universal basic income. But yeah, that's just like, I think there should be more proposals so that we can actually consider them and bring them like into the mainstream.
Well, I want to say this. I know I haven't heard from all of you, but it's just so refreshing to hear from you because, see, they think you know, the powers that be think that young folks don't have opinions and that young folks don't know what's going on. So to hear you sharing it says, hey, it debunks all of that comment. What would you like to see? What do you think are the important issues?
I think there's many important issues, and I think
let's narrow them down.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we can always go that way, but yeah, there are. But I mean, if you had a couple that you were going to identify that you saw as being...
Ones that are important to me, as we've touched on, are climate change, because that is something that affects where I live, and it's going to affect my life very, very heavily. And another one is the U.S. Prison system and the U.S. correctional system. And there's a lot of issues within that, but there's just statistics that make me uncomfortable, and they do have to do with discrimination and racism, and that's not really a solvable problem, but it needs to be worked at very thoroughly.
The issue that I would add to everything that everyone already said is probably guns. I do some gun sense advocacy, and the more I do, the more I realize how big of a problem it is. Gun culture is very ingrained in American society, and just like some statistics, like nearly 100 people are shot every day. And what we really talk about a lot is mass shootings, but that actually only accounts for 1% of all the shootings in America. And I think that the next president needs to try to do something about that, because a lot of people agree that it is something that is a problem in America, but there's not a lot of like legislative action that we see with that. So,
but we do know why, right? You know why we don't see a lot of legislative action. Okay.
The NRA is very powerful.
Money talks. Okay. The real deal is money talks. And they have a lot of money, and politicians are worried about being, you know, reelected, those who are already. And so I don't know where we go, but I'm glad to hear your comments and your thoughts. Yes, ma'am.
I'd really like to see climate change addressed a bit more because, you know, there is a limit. Like, you know, we're going to hit a point where you can't fix it, and if we're not addressing it now, then we're going to run out of time. And, yeah, also the gun thing. We really need to establish some kind of system to control who these guns are, you know, who's accessing these guns. And America's image is a gun, I think, that I was speaking to some people overseas this summer, and they ask me, like, how are you not afraid to, like, how are you just not afraid? And I'm like, I don't understand, what do you mean? They think that they don't want to visit America. I mean, that's not the issue, but it's like they are so afraid of like guns like this, you know. So it kind of highlights how desensitized we are to that, that, you know, we don't realize how dangerous our situation is.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, before we came on the program, I was saying to some of you, you know, we always start out by talking about what's happening, you know, locally. And it seems like it's the same thing. Somebody got shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same. So I said, I'm not going to deal with that anymore. I mean, we deal with it all the time. I mean, that's always something. So-and-so got shot. Dead body found. Bullet in the chest, in the shoulder, whatever. So, and we have become very desensitized. I don't know how we change that. And all of these issues you all have brought up were so good. We'll have to go back and elaborate on them later because I was going to do that. But I have a couple other things I want to hear from you about. Yes, feel free. Yes.
So, or maybe two, but.
That's right.
One more issue that I really want to have talked about that really sets up a precedent to actually have or be able to have the opportunity of change is addressing how much power corporations and lobbying firms have in the United States as far as legislation goes, because it is so hard to pass progressive legislation that actually has potential for real change. And it's hard because these corporations and these lobbying firms, these lobbyists, are trickling so much money into the United States government that candidates that come into office to make change never get the opportunity to do it because they get preoccupied with their reelection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these politicians that come into office, from day one, they're being pestered by these political action committees that want their opinions and their standings to be represented first. And like you said, money talks. And there are candidates like Warren, one of my favorite candidates, who talks about breaking down the power that most of these lobbying firms and corporations have and breaking them down so that the government is serving the people and not the people that are in power.
How do we get there, though? I mean, that's one of those things where I agree with what's being said, but talk is cheap.
Yeah.
Okay? And we can talk all we want. How do we get to the point where we walk that?
You just need people who are just as committed as some of the candidates into government. Because in the past couple of years, we have actually seen some politicians like Ilhan Omar or AOC and Warren come out of the shadows and say, you know, this is a problem.
And but, you know, they don't count because they came from those S-hole countries.
Yeah.
And they don't really matter.
And we need more support from parties and people that aren't generally looked upon as people who would support that. Like Justin Amash, a politician that just sort of defected from the Republican Party, is someone who is now supporting Democratic ideals and things that he wouldn't support if he was getting money from Republican-backed political action committees or lobbying firms.
Well, you hit on a number of things because you indeed are very correct. It's, first of all, once they get in office, the big worry is staying in office.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, they are reluctant to take positions.
Yeah.
and reluctant to take a stance. So they don't stand for anything, in my opinion. I don't know where you all sit. Guys, time is running out. We got to talk about the one thing that's going on, the whistleblower stuff.
Yeah.
And we only have, you believe this? 5 minutes. I looked up 5 minutes. Okay. Whistleblower claims, you know, that Trump, we're going to go to that, abuse his office. He called the Ukrainian president, and he wanted to solicit interference from this foreign country for his benefits for the 2020 election, asking them to investigate Biden and Biden's son. Comments. Where do you all sit on this? What do you think about this? The Democrats are now considering strongly impeachment.
Yeah.
We're going to have to talk about this again soon because we aren't going to have enough time. There's so many questions even just about impeachment alone. Okay. So go for it. You look like you want to say something. You don't? Well, whomever wants to say something, let's go.
What Trump did is a terrible abuse of power, but it's not directly an illegal abuse of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't say, I'm probably going to go against Joe Biden in the next election and I need you to get some dirt on him. He said, oh, you know, we give you guys aid and, hey, like, just something that was on my mind. Joe Biden. And it's not like he didn't, like, completely say it. He just, like, kind of suggested it. And also impeachment inquiries. This, at this late of a stage,
yeah.
I wish Pelosi had the guts before. She hasn't really done anything to impeach Trump up until now. And the risk right now is if they fail, Trump is definitely getting reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything he's done up until this point will just be validated.
Uh-huh.
People are going to think he didn't get impeached, so maybe probably he hasn't done anything wrong. And his chances of reelection skyrocket.
I mean, although it wasn't like you were saying, like, it wasn't an explicit quid pro quo that happened in the phone call that we got, that we all saw the transcript of, but it was clearly wrong. Like, that's not something that you should do, clearly. But like you said, it's frustrating because Trump has done a lot of stuff, even before he was president, that wasn't right, and it's frustrating that none of that seemed to be the last straw, but this apparently is. But it'll look bad if in the future when they look at history they see that we didn't do anything to try to impeach him. So I think this is good in some ways, but it's risky because if it fails, then
yes, that I think, you know, in following Pelosi, that the risk of not being successful was her deterrent,
mm-hmm.
Was the reason she did not pursue this, you know, actively pursuing it, okay? So, comments?
Yeah, I mean, I was under the impression that impeachment, at least by the Senate, was impossible, because at least 20 mm-hmm. Republicans or something like that would mm-hmm. switch sides, so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it doesn't really sound like, I mean, if the public has impeached him, like, you know, as a general public, like, I think personally, that's good enough for me. I'm glad to see, like, the public recognizes that this is a problem. A lot of Republicans do, too. A lot of the people I talk to. So, yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, it's a difficult situation.
And they do recognize it. But, and I've posed this question before. How can they tolerate, how can they say nothing about his behaviors up until even this point? Forget about what he did with the Ukrainian president. But think about all the stuff he's done before, you know, as president. And we don't have to go before, you know, when he wasn't president, as president. And they have sat back and said nothing. What does that say about the Republican Party? I mean, egregious types of things.
It says their morals aren't in check, but as far as looking at it politically, it's much easier for them to ignore
mm-hmm.
and try to forget things he's done than to cast blame on someone from their own party
mm-hmm.
and risk getting the blame on their own party. So it's much easier to, you know, say,
yeah, he did this, but look at what other people have been doing.
I know. They do. Yeah, they do. We are out of time. I just want to say thank you to you all. We didn't get to cover everything, but much, much appreciation. To my listening audience, thank you for the privilege of your time and your ear. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.